When the marathon bombing first took place on Monday afternoon, people didn't know exactly what it was. Even after the fact that a second bomb went off down Boylston Street 10 seconds later, people knew, okay, these are related things. It's not somebody's furnace in a basement blowing up. These are actually bombings that are going on here. But no one knew who it was, why they did it, how they did it, etc. Well, now we know the answer to who, and hopefully with Johar still alive, we will find out the answers to how and why. But one of the other questions was, at what point do you call an act like that terrorism? Not just calls for it in the media, but even when President Obama appeared on TV on Monday, he avoided using the word terror or terrorism in his first press conference. The next day, however, he did say that the FBI was investigating the bombings as, quote, an act of terrorism. What does that mean legally? Laura Beth Nielsen's here to answer that question. She's the director of legal studies at Northwestern University and research professor for the American Bar Foundation and author of License to Harass, Law Hierarchy, and Offensive Public Speech. Laura Beth, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you for having me.
Explain to me what it means to legally call something terrorism.
Well, the definition of terrorism has changed over time, but one of the consistent elements is that it's the use of force or violence with the goal of achieving political or social changes that you or your group is looking for. So the issue of calling it terrorism right when it's just starting to begin to happen is that we have no idea what these people's goal or mission was. What is their motive? We're not going to know that for a really long time.
So why was the president able to call it terrorism on Tuesday when we didn't even have an idea who the people who did it were at the time?
Well, I think that there was a certain amount of blowback from not using the word in the when he spoke on the first press conference that he had, and he didn't call it terrorism because people feel terrorized. And as Obama said in the second news conference, he said, anytime people use bombs to target innocent Americans, it's an act of terror. I'm paraphrasing, but that's roughly correct. And I think there is something to the idea that bombs are a particular kind of weapon. They're indiscriminate. You know, putting them in public places versus even a targeted place, I'm not saying it's okay, but, you know, like an abortion clinic, you can see, okay, that's definitely targeted towards the acts that they're doing there versus just in a big crowd. They just want to kill people, right? That's why they're putting bombs in a big crowd. They probably aren't on a mission to, you know, end exercise in the United States or end marathoning, right? So we don't know what their social goal is.
But it's different from, for instance, Adam Lanza, the Newtown shooter, who just wanted to inflict as much pain as possible.
Right. Well, that's another sort of weird, gray, murky area is what's the difference between mental illness and social movement activism? So, you know, if you think about Ted Kaczynski, who certainly terrorized America.
The Unabomber.
And the Newton shooter, they both were terrorizing, right? The word resonates with us. I think that's part of what's happening here. We feel afraid to go out. We feel afraid to send our kids to school. We feel afraid to buy Tylenol when the Tylenol poisoning scare is going on, or we feel like our products aren't safe. So it feels terrorizing, and so it resonates, but how do we know if these people are connected to a social movement? Are they only connected to it in their mind? I mean, we may come to find out that these guys, you know, we're trained and radicalized by a particular set of people, and we find out that they really are part of some, you know, anti-American movement. Okay.
Does the president using terrorism also activate federal law enforcement?
Well, yeah, and so that's what he means when he says, we're going to treat this like an act of terrorism. He says, we are going to use, and he said this too, we're going to use all of the resources available to that the federal government has are being made available to the Boston Police Department, the FBI is going in. And so part of what it's saying is we're going to bring all of our expertise and all of our resources to the investigation of this crime because we think it's really important to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's true whether you call it terrorism or not. If somebody sets off a bomb in a public place, it's perfectly reasonable, whether you know the motivation of the person who did it, to say, we're going to use all of our resources and expertise to solve this crime. That's what Americans expect. That's why we pay our taxes. That's what we want. And that's what happened. And it worked. I mean, you know, and they found him.
Yep. Only took 102 hours to bring this thing to a resolution. I say that like 102 sounds like a big number. To me, it's a very small number. We started on Monday. We ended Friday night. And here we are on Saturday. And, you know, the people of Boston and a lot of other parts of the country can breathe much easier today because of that, whether we call it terrorism or not. But I was concerned about why we would not use it or we would use it in certain circumstances. I also have another legal question for you, if you don't mind, Laura. I'd like to ask you about last night when they arrested Johar, when they found him in that boat in the backyard on Franklin Street in Watertown, Massachusetts, and they dragged him out and he needed medical attention, and he is still today in serious condition in the hospital, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in the Boston area. They did not give him the Miranda warning. The Miranda warning, which we all know from watching hundreds of episodes of Law & Order and other cop shows, where the police have to tell you, you have the right to remain silent, you have the right to an attorney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They did not do that with this guy.
Right.
Why not?
Well, there's an exception to the Miranda rule for public safety. And so what they want to do is ask him, are there any other bombs anywhere? You know, if we go to your house, your apartment, is it going to be booby-trapped? They want to, they're going to go investigate those places and collect all the evidence that they can. But they want to ask him that because it could affect how they enter the place. If he says, yeah, there are bombs, clearly they're going to be careful either way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's for very limited purposes. It's really only for ascertaining information that is an imminent threat to public safety right at that moment. So if they're smart, and I'm going to go ahead and assume that the best interrogators that we have in the FBI are the ones handling this, and so they're probably really smart, they're going to ask him that information relatively quickly and then read him his Miranda rights, because that will be the point at which what he says can or can't be used to incriminate him. So they should be wanting to read him his Miranda rights as soon as they're able, after they've asked about the imminent danger that he might know about.
Now, I'd like to get your reaction to something that Emily Bazelon wrote on Slate.com last night about 11:30. She wrote, "No one is crying over the rights of the young man who's accused of killing innocent people, helping his brother set off bombs that were loaded to maim and terrorizing Boston Thursday night and Friday. But the next time you read about an abusive interrogation or a wrongful conviction that resulted from a false confession, think about why we have Miranda in the first place. It's to stop law enforcement authorities from committing abuses, because when they make their own rules, sometime, somewhere, they inevitably will." Does she make a good argument for why they should have used Miranda on him?
Oh, yeah, and I didn't cry, but I did feel upset about it, because I think this is a case that everyone is watching, and setting up the idea that the Miranda warning is not important for the general public, or that there are exceptions to it that make our Constitution more flexible on that matter than it should be, I think that's a terrible message to send. And it's one of the things that, by using the word terrorism, terrorism, terrorism for the past few days, is sort of what sets up people to say, oh, well, it's no big deal. He's a terrorist, right? We know we can hold them in Guantanamo without even charging them with anything for 10 years. So I think part of the use of that word builds up expectations in ordinary public's in ordinary citizens' mind that then leads people not to cry too much when he's read his Miranda rights. And part of it's about the horrificness of this crime, which is horrific. But part of it is that he's been put in this category of the people that we don't actually care about their constitutional rights. And
absolutely. And that's why it's important to note today he is not considered an enemy combatant, but a criminal. And we'll go through the criminal justice system, the federal criminal justice system, and probably face the death penalty in the end. Laura Beth Nielsen from Northwestern University, thanks for joining me today on America Weekend.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. And you can email me, paul@americaweekend.com. We love to hear from you and love to have you like us online too. From the Envision Radio Networks. America Weekend.